This podcast is sponsored by AAA, the American Automobile Association. AAA members get discounts on tickets, resort accommodations, and more at Walt Disney World and other Orlando attractions. If you book a qualifying Walt Disney World Resort vacation package at select AAA offices, you'll receive a free subscription to touringplans.com and dedicated trip planning resources just for AAA clients. Go to AAA.com or ask your local AAA travel agent for more details on this offer. Hi, welcome to another episode of the Unofficial Guide to Walt Disney World Disney Dish Podcast with Jim Hill. I'm Len Testa. We're here today at the Disney Hollywood Studios, the one park that we've not yet covered. Jim, we have a lot of pressure here because, as you know, sequels are an embedded genre within the American experience, and there have been some very good sequels, The Godfather 2, The Empire Strikes Back, Break into Electric Boogaloo. There's a lot to live up to. Do you feel any pressure here about getting started?
Well, you took my electric boogaloo joke.
So, sorry, man.
Pressure. What pressure? I'm fine.
All right, we'll be good. All right, so we're gonna start. We're starting today. We're just at the entrance of Disney's Hollywood Studios. We've just passed the entrance, actually, past the turnstiles, which are designed in a streamlined, modern architecture. We've got the Oscars Super Service across from us, and we're standing in front of Sid Kahuna's one-of-a-kind Antiques and Curios. Jim, what do you think of when you first get to the studio's entrance?
That I'm so glad I'm not in Epcot.
Nice.
Well, no. Actually, to explain, there's a reason. You know, the way this park is, the reason this park is the way it is because of Epcot. That you have to understand that. You know, you've heard the joke, the acronym that with Epcot is everybody comes out tired. You know, that was a massive park and opens in 82. And they learned the hard way by creating this giant park with huge roadways and that sort of thing that people got overwhelmed. And, you know, so when it came time to do, you know, what was then known as Disney MGM, Bob Weiss did a very clever thing. He knew from the complaints that they had to, you know, they had to address it, and they literally hit the reset button and went back to Disneyland. And so what's really intriguing about MGM is, in fact, sadly, the hat has sort of disrupted this, but the literally Bob got the length from the entrance of Disneyland coming under the train station to the castle, and that's literally the distance from the gates here to the Hollywood Studios.
From the entrance turnstiles to the Grubman Chinese Theater is the same distance as the entrance.
Same distance. More to the point, you know, the if you honestly, if you take a look at it, the scale of the buildings here along Hollywood Boulevard are Disneyland. It's that intimate, you know, again, the notion of let's have an intimate experience in Hollywood as opposed to a large, grandiose experience. And more to the point, that's also why he picked the period that he did. This is all the architecture here is from 1920 to 1935.
Yeah.
You know, and all 1 year. But again, what's fascinating about it is each of the individual buildings here, from the Crossroads of the World icon building to Dark Room, these are all legitimate buildings in Los Angeles.
Right. You can go see some of them.
That's exactly. But that Bob himself stitched together to give this unified view.
That's incredible.
But no, it's a beautiful park, and particularly at night when you know the neon goes on. In fact,
it's very pretty at night. It's actually a great park for architecture.
Absolutely, absolutely. And in fact, what's kind of ironic about this whole thing is that as the guys were designing Cars Land for California, they came out to study the neon here.
Nice.
So, but anyway, no, it's a very charming park, except for the screaming people.
There's always screaming people in a Disney park. So Jim, I know a couple of things are a couple of design elements on every Disney entrance.
Mm-hmm.
Are the same. So you mentioned, I think when we go through the Magic Kingdom, they've got things like the camera shop on your right, and we've got the dark room here.
Mm-hmm.
What else is the same, or what else is similar on the studios?
Well, again, you know, if you think about it, you know, it pretty much, if we go around the corner here, the little coffee shop, that sort of thing. Same, you know, the notion is that people, as they're entering the park on the right, are looking for things, whether it's, you know, sunscreen or hats, or I need my coffee and my donut. You know, it's right there. Sadly, though, the design of this park kind of falls apart once you get past its main street or its retail corridor.
Why is that?
Well, part of it is because, you know, for example, Sunset Boulevard was never built the way it was initially intended. That, you know, Tower of Terror was literally supposed to be one of five e-tickets that were, you know, going to be built over there.
Really, five?
Oh, God, between Dick Tracy's Crime Stoppers and... you know, Roger Rabbit's Toontown Transit. There was some amazing stuff that was going to be built back there.
Wow.
So,
is it still on the drawing boards? I mean, still stuff that they, well, they're probably not going to go back to Dick Tracy, but.
Well, and it, the interesting thing about that one is that they actually built a full-size mock-up in the warehouse in Tujunga. And even when Dick Tracy was not doing the business that they'd hoped, they were still trying to sell the Oriental Land Company on building it. And so, a friend of mine who actually, you know, worked the mock-up said, you know, they and the thing is, the Oriental Land Company executives never travel alone. They always bring their wives. And so here are all these nice, demure, you know, wives of, you know, giant corporate citizens of Japan. So, you know, so they all go to the warehouse, and they literally watch their husbands do the demo. You know, they drive around, and it, literally, they're in these 40-style...
We want a public service announcement.
But anyway, they're... They want them to demo it. So they literally get in these 1940-style cars. They're leaning out the window with machine guns, and they're rolling through rooms filled with props that explode as you shoot at them, all right? And so, you know, so they now, they reset the room, and it's just out of a courtesy. The wives are standing there, and it's like, well would you ladies like to go?
Would you like to use the machine guns?
Yes. And it turns out the Japanese women were so much better and lethal at blowing. You know, in fact, they were like, can we go again? You know, it was like years of suppression and aggravation. And said, you know, the Japanese executives gave kind of a cursory. It's like, okay, this is cool. The wives were blowing up the room left and right like, this is great. We got to build it. So, sadly, no. Did not go ahead with it. So,
well, let's do this. Is there anything else on Hollywood Boulevard, this end, that we want to discuss? Well, otherwise, we're going to go to the left.
Well, it's worth noting... in fact, again, you got to remember, this was the first park that was designed understanding that it was going to have streetmosphere. And for example...
They specifically designed... Oh, really?
Well, Craig McDare Wilson told me about, in fact, just up here, I believe, if it's still...
Oh, we're walking up towards the Keystone Clothiers.
Deliberately put water pipes in that the cast members could open and close. You know, the Hollywood, you know, Department of Public Works would have props to work with.
Oh, that's classic.
You know, and, you know, for example, the windows here.
Oh, wait,
they made them practical so people could open the window and yell down and heckle at other people on the street.
Oh, so at the, on the vintage shops in the, what's that store right there?
The
hat store. The windows actually open?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And, you know, and I guess the other thing that frankly got lost here was that if you were here during the first six opening months of the place, mm-hmm. you know, for example, the Five and Dime literally had Five and Dime merchandise. I mean, you could go in and get, you know, plastic bracelets. And, I mean, you walked in and it was the 1940s. It was amazing.
Oh, that's fantastic.
But, you know, again, the design continued right up to the their castle, the Hollywood, you know, the Chinese theater. In fact, the only thing that Disney did differently, they got them to unearth the actual blueprints for the Chinese theater.
Really?
And, I mean, it's you know, the exterior detail is dead on right up until the actual roof, which they extended slightly because, again, this is supposed to be the Hollywood that never was. So
okay.
Just to give it that little bit more... of a fantasy edge, a little more of a fun edge.
That's right. The roof is sort of, in the real Grumman theater, the roof is sort of shrunk a little bit. Mm-hmm. It's not quite to the scale of the rest of the building. This is the stuff I like, though. So we're standing outside right now. We're at Sunset Plaza and Echo Park Drive. It's the back of the clothier shop. And it's still really well-themed. It's sort of an Egyptian sort of theme in the back, right? Or a Chinese theme in the back. And it's an ATM machine, but it's surrounded by these giant dragon mouths. Like almost like lions, you know, guarding the gate of an estate, and that's the thing that's ornamenting the ATM machine, which I really love. I mean, that kind of detail is lacking in a lot of other parks.
Oh, no.
Here, it's wonderful.
Absolutely, absolutely. But again, you know, these parks reflect the times that they were built, and you have to remember that when this park was built. You know, we're talking. You know, Disney turns the key on it basically in '85, mm-hmm. and there was. You know, considerable pressure to get this built because, you know...
Oh, Universal, yeah.
That's it, exactly. And Eisner was privy to what Universal's plans were. He knew when it was going to open, and we had to have this open ahead of that, you know, to claim the higher ground. And But the problem was that, this is 1985 Disney, that they haven't really had a hit film since Herbie the Love Bug in 69, which is why they had to go out and literally cut the deal with MGM, you know, to get their film library, to get, you know, people and characters to drop into these parks.
How hard of a deal did MGM drive, knowing that with Disney?
Well, that's an interesting part of the story, because it honestly wasn't a very good deal at all. That for $100,000 a year starting, and then it would creep up incrementally over a 20-year period till the final one licensing fee of $1 million per year. Disney got the MGM name. They got Leo the Lion, and they got access to basically their entire film library.
For $100,000 for the first year?
When Kerkorian found out, he was furious. Kerkorian, the head of MGM.
Right.
And he actually spent the better part of, 5 years in court trying to get the name away from Disney, because, of course...
After they signed the contract?
Yes.
Seller's regret?
In fact, because, again, you have to understand that this wasn't just going to be a single park. This was going to... There was a Disney MGM... Japan in the works. There was a Disney MGM. In fact, part of the opening special for Euro Disneyland, they devoted 5 minutes to the
studios.
Studio park.
Yeah. Well, they had to do that contractually for Paris, right?
Yep. So, but anyway, so they were really struggling to find things to fill this park with. So, the nice thing is that MGM is filled, or excuse me, the Imagineering is filled with all these film buffs. So, for example, we're standing across from Men in Bills here. Wallace Beery. There's a lot of great affection for film history here. Again, the front part of the park holds together. As we begin to wander out, things get a little weird.
That's right. So we're over in Echo Lake right now. Jim mentioned Men in Bills. So we've got our backs to the Hollywood and Vine restaurant. And I just noticed that there's office rents signs that say no actors. That's great. And then in front of us is Echo Lake. Looks like they're doing a little bit of construction, or they've drained Echo Lake for something. But anyway, we've got Men in Bills Dockside Diner on our right. We've got Gertie the Dinosaur, which is an actual cartoon from the 20s?
Oh, I mean...
Earlier than that?
Windsor McKay. I mean, literally the
on our left?
Cartoon star.
That's right.
But speaking of cartoon stars, just... Over here,
Hollywood
1928 building here, just behind that, we have the Eddie Valiant's offices. That was, honestly, when this park opened in May 1st, 1989, that was the biggest film Disney had done up until that point. So Roger Rabbit was everywhere in this park. They literally painted his little pink feet, well, giant pink feet, on the pavement to lead you around the place.
And, oh, that's great.
In fact, the finale of the backstage tram tour was, as you came through New York Street, you actually passed the Acme warehouse, and here was the dip machine, out in the street spraying you. So if there are any tunes on board, they're in trouble.
Oh, that's great. All right, so anything about the Tune-In Lounge or... 50s Primetime Cafe?
This is a big favorite restaurant. In fact, this was sort of the starting point of a new form of Disney dining. Think about it, Primetime. I mean, you're eating in these highly themed nooks, and here's Mom feeding you comfort food. And not only that, Mom gives you attitude. I mean, this is kind of on the parallel track of, this came into the world about the same time the Adventurers Club did.
Oh, right.
That the notion of let's do Disney show, but in a different way. And there's a reason that this has stayed as popular as it has. That people just walk out of here and evangelize for the dining experience. Like, she made me stand in the corner because I didn't eat my vegetables. It was cool.
it was cool. Exactly. Oh, funny. Yeah, it's not a bad restaurant. The bar is actually pretty good, too. Have you ever had the peanut butter and jelly milkshake?
Not with my cholesterol. No.
It's actually pretty good.
So
we're walking up towards the Indiana Jones epic stunt spectacular. Now, here's something interesting, right? Mm-hmm. So we're walking up towards it. On the left-hand side, we've got the Indiana Jones Adventure Outpost, which is the store where they sell all the stuff. But if you go back a ways back here, they've actually got props. Have you seen these?
Oh, yeah.
They've got props for the Indiana Jones show. They've got tanks and cars and stuff. But nobody ever goes back here. Is it a standing room only area? Is this where the queue is supposed to go when Indiana Jones becomes popular again?
Yes.
Every 20 years, it'll
slide. Well, no. If you actually look in the ground here, you can see the recessed points where, yes, the you know, the poles are supposed to go in and direct people back.
Yeah, so on the ground, folks, there are these little circles, these little brass circles, where the velvet rope, as it were, would go. But in the very back here, back behind the behind the sound stage, we've got army cars, we've got an actual life-size tank, we've got like a camp and stuff, all the stuff that very few people ever see.
Yeah, I mean this is prop work that actually they pulled from Last Crusade. That and in fact that was what was kind of interesting. I have to remember that when this first opened, Last Crusade hadn't been released yet.
And, right, so 89, right?
Right. Yeah. And so what ended up happening was I remember very distinctly being here for the opening press event, and they only showed the sort of the giant, you know, fight on the wing part of it.
Okay.
Because, again, this was still in technical rehearsal. In fact, it stayed in technical rehearsal till well into the middle of the first summer of operation here, because they just weren't ready. But, you know, as part of the press conference, you know, people asked, well, all right, so this references the first film and a little bit of the second film. Will we see, you know, pieces of Threefold in it? And it's like, well, we hope so, you know. I guess we should be happy that they didn't continue that, and we're now watching the Crystal Skull show.
The interesting thing is you mentioned the props from 3, and you notice on the left-hand side of the tank, so the our right-hand side, there's the gun turret that exploded when Indy put the rock in.
That's it, exactly.
And the only reason I know that was because Last Crusade was on TBS last week, and I happened to see it. Other than that, I know nothing about the movie.
We named the dog Indiana.
Are there any plans to refurbish Indiana Jones, or is it just...
Oh, boy.
You would think that because it's a stage show and they've got such elaborate props that refurbishing the show is like a multi-year project.
Yeah,
and Disney doesn't do multi-year projects like that well. That's one of those things where the budget has to be, you know, done in a year.
Look, I'll tell you from having been down here in 95, 96, and in fact, I was here for an after-hours event. It's the Minnie's Moonlight Madness. It's you ever heard about this? It's a cast member event held after hours in the park, where you're literally bungeed to three or four of your friends and, you know, racing through the park answering trivia questions, that sort of thing.
Wow.
And my then wife, Michelle Smith, and I had done it the year previous with my daughter Alice. It was only like 3 or 4 months old at that point, and she was in a Snuggie. And
tied to your chest?
Tied to my chest.
That's great.
And they didn't have an issue, so we went the next year to do it, and we literally brought Alice in a stroller. Nobody caught us till we were literally in the backstage area, where suddenly this is rather officious manager. It's like, you're going to have to take your child out of here. And it's like, you know, this is a contest for adults. And it's like, but she was here last year. It's like, well, that may be the case. But it's like, my car is miles away. I have a giant Emily Younga stroller. The guy says, all right, tell you what. You know, one of you two parents are going to have to stay out. So, and watch your child. But I can take you to a conference room backstage where you can sit and watch television. And it's like, you know, and we're grumbling the whole way. And they take us deep into the administration building they open up a conference room, and literally the walls are covered with all of the concept art for Fantastic Hollywood.
And you're like, I'll stay. I'm good here.
Like, no, I'll stay with the baby.
She loves me more.
You know, and so literally, you know, it's like, I've been there for an hour sucking the art off the wall. This is the version of Fantasmic, for example, that instead of the Pocahontas canoes had the Nautilus. And the idea was that Nautilus came out from stage left, the squid came from stage right, and Mickey's on stage. And again, I honestly wish they'd done this, because it's Mickey on stage playing this giant organ that's belching steam, and there were two versions of the art. One was just Mickey, you know, hitting the organ, and the other one was Mickey literally with the half mask for Phantom. I'm hideous, look away, you know. So, but among that, to bring this full circle, but among the pieces of art that was on the wall were all of the expansion pads for this park.
Oh.
And one of the things they designated was right behind this area here. You know, they literally did the overlay, and on it said Indiana Jones Adventure. As in, they were seriously considering in the 95-96 time frame pulling this down and dropping the Indiana Jones Adventure ride from Disneyland in the park.
Really?
Yeah. So...
that would have been interesting.
Yeah.
It's one of the few rides where I would say, you know, cloning it is probably an okay thing. It's a good ride.
Oh, I agree.
And if you had to get rid of this for that, I think everyone would say, most people would say that's a fair trade.
Yeah. Anyway, long story of the short is, I wish they had invented the digital camera 10 years ago.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah.
Kill me.
All right,
kill me.
Jim and I are right at the Indiana Jones prop that says, warning, do not pull rope. So we're going to pull the rope and see what happens. Here you go.
Oh, block. Again. Oh.
All right, that's a little treat for you guys. All right, Jim, let's keep going through through Echo Lake. So we're passing Indiana Jones on our left. It's shuttered right now because the first show, it's not till, I think, 10:30 or so. So 11:30, so we got a lot of time there. They're doing 5 shows today. That's actually not bad for a late February show. We've got coming up straight ahead what's left of Sounds Dangerous. Jim, Sounds Dangerous.
Well, you know, now it sounds seasonal, you know, and more to the point, if what they're saying is true, we're going to see that, Comedy Warehouse show come back.
Did you see that during the holidays?
No, I did not. I heard great things about it, though. Though I also heard that, frankly, that, you know, when the fire marshal came through and saw the amount of equipment, you know, again, you need a lot of equipment in the theater to actually do this. It was one of these things where it's like, you can't actually put that stuff against the door.
So what, I saw it actually over Christmas, between Christmas and New Year. Mm-hmm. And it's a relatively small stage. They had drawn a curtain behind sort of half the stage. Mm-hmm. And on it was, you know, every imaginable prop that they would have needed. So they had the piano, they had, you know, boxes full of large goofy hats and costumes. And then they had a blinking Christmas tree, which was, you know, because it was seasonal and stuff, so that was good. It actually wasn't a bad show. You could tell, though, that the improv guys hadn't done improv like that in a long time. I think we caught one of the first shows that they had done, and you could tell everyone was a little rusty. Parts of it were very funny. Mm-hmm. Parts of it were, you know, I just need to get through the next 30 seconds of this skit type thing. And that was interesting. I'd love to see them bring it back, though, because it adds a little bit of... you know, the old days, you actually had more live performances here.
Oh, no, absolutely. I mean, that was the whole point of this park. It was designed with Streetmosphere. You would literally bump into the citizens of Hollywood. And, you know, now, you know, it's just again, it's the classic battle between budget and ops.
That's not an expensive thing to do, though, right? Is it the performances, the performers themselves that...
Well, it's not just that. I mean, think about it. You need 6 equity performers on stage. You also need a sound guy. You need a light guy. You need a person standing backstage. A house manager. It just suddenly becomes really, really, really expensive.
No, that's true. So. We're over. By the way, is there any reason why they couldn't bring back the Monster Soundstage? I mean, does anyone know who Chevy Chase is? But they could do it. He needs one more vacation film. They could do it.
I think it was more the case of not so much. Again, we're not 1899 anymore.
No,
1989 anymore. Just the post-show stuff of, you know, maintaining those props, let alone the 3D sound show which, again, was supposed to be, you know, the savior of the park. So
that's interesting. So we're over in front of Star Tours right now. Have you been on the Star Tours too?
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
What do you think?
It's a wonderful update of the pre-existing attraction. The thing I personally like about it is that, for example, the pre-show is now 4 times as long. I mean, it just literally, you could stand there. You know, they figured there were going to be more people because of the multiple rides going through multiple times.
Right.
So they literally created 4 times as much material in the pre-show area. There's more audio. There's more in-jokes. There's more, and it just goes deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. When you think about how much footage they put together for the multiple versions. I was talking with somebody where it literally takes 6 hours to ride every iteration of this thing, and there's all sorts of in-jokes, and, you know, the guys at Lucasfilm went nuts. They just literally, you can re-ride this thing for days and not see things, or, you know, see things you've never seen before.
That's great.
So...
Has the ride lived up to Disney's expectations regarding number of guests that have been on it?
Actually, no. In fact, again, that's kind of a sore point. They did not get the attendance bump, at least here at this park. that they were expecting.
It's vastly more popular in California.
Absolutely. But again, you have a culture out there that goes, you know, once every 6 months. And so, you know, it's exciting for them to, ooh, let's go on Star Wars and see, you know, see if we can get a different version. We're here, I mean, again, you know, you of all people know how often people come back here. It's what, 3.7 years, is that?
Yeah, there's a few years between visits.
Yeah. So, you know, it didn't hit the way they expected. They're genuinely intrigued to see what's going to happen when they open it in Japan, though. So.
Oh yeah, that will be interesting in Japan, because Japan is a much more local thing too. So that might work out well there. I wonder if they take that into account when they design rides, like how much of this was going to be local population, or is that something where they just, I mean, they've only done it a little bit. They probably don't have enough data to know really whether something's going to be a hit with locals or not.
Well, it's, you know, I mean, it's finessing that's a mindset that they're just coming to for Disneyland, though it's kind of ironic because, of course, they're finishing this billion-dollar makeover of DCA, which they're hoping will finally turn Disneyland from, and I mean this in the kindest possible way, the world's most famous regional park to an actual resort, a multi-day destination resort.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, yes, they fill those hotels, but not nearly as much as they'd like, so...
That's true. We're over in the Muppet Plaza right now, right in front of Muppet Vision 3D. Are there any plans to redo any part of this attraction or the area based on the Muppet film? You saw the Muppet film, right?
Yeah. And again, just, you know, a nice updating. To be honest, right now we are literally in the crucial moment with the Muppets. The movie,
it did $88 million, right?
Stateside, which is literally two-thirds of what Disney expected. It's interesting. They took the numbers that Enchanted did. They took the numbers that Tangled did. The last four holiday films that Disney had open in the Thanksgiving period and averaged them, and that was $135 million domestic. And so it's like, okay, that's what we should earn off of this thing. And it literally came in at two-thirds of that. And there's... It's an interesting situation because within Disney, it's like, look, the franchise was dead. You know, I mean, we brought it back from the dead, and this is going to pay us dividends, but, you know, we have to put the time in. We have to put the energy in. And, you know, so you got to be patient with this. You can't expect this to just catch fire overnight. It had been neglected for a long time. But, again, this is Disney, you know, owner of Marvel and, you know, all of its own characters. And it's like, in order to devote more time to bringing back the Muppets, that means money and time and energy has to come away from somebody else.
Right.
So right now, literally, there are accounts at Disney, just, you know, the Blu-rays and the DVDs of Muppets are in the boxes shipping to stores. And it's like, okay, let's see what those numbers look like. Now, to be fair here, I was just talking with the Muppet folks, and they say they are busier, they are busier than ever.
Did you ever think you would utter the line, "I was just talking with the Muppet folks"? Go ahead.
Well, again, there are people who put their hands up these creatures, okay?
Yeah.
You know, and get little hand. In fact, poor Dave Golds, the guy who's been doing Gonzo for 30 plus years at this point, literally had shoulder surgery because after all these years of standing and holding things up, he'd blown out his arm.
Oh.
You know, I mean, again, there's whole aspects of this that people don't know about, but if the DVDs sell well, there's a couple of things they're considering. One is a holiday edition of the 3D movie, but would literally repurpose footage from the Michael Caine Christmas Carol.
Oh.
But there were so many things they left on the table that would have been great. I mean, for example, here where the old Pizza Planet was,
yep.
You know, this was in the initial plan. This was going to be the Swedish chef's cooking school, or television cooking school. And, you know, get a quick service restaurant, but you walk through under all these screens of the Swedish chef cooking things. And then Mama Melrose was literally going to be, you know, the great Gonza's pandemonium pizza parlor, where, you know... it was going to be amazing. I mean, when you look at all the woodwork and beams overhead...
At Mama Melrose's, or...?
How thick they are. There was a reason. They were going to do practical... You know, little rat hand carts that were rolling around the restaurant with Parmesan cheese and and boxes of pasta that were supposedly going in and out of the restaurant. And the great thing is that, again, supposedly there was going to be a common kitchen here. Again, there were so many great gags that got left on the table here. Like, who is this? Again, the guy who does the boomerang fish. All right. But he was literally going to have a store here. And you'd look in the window, and there were going to be little rubber fish flapping in the window and spinning. I mean, this was going to be Muppets floor to ceiling.
So we're back now behind, we just passed Pizza Planet on our right. We're back in front of the engine company number one, the Parkside Antiques. You guys know where the snowman is on the ground. There's a Christmas store, and then we're directly facing Mama Melrose is in the front. So the so that was going to be Gonzo's Pizza Parlor.
Oh yeah, and the great thing is you'd be eating in there, and you'd be watching an overhead monitor, and Gonzo would backstage in the kitchen, standing in front of like the vent.
Right.
You know, and if we're having trouble with the vent, and Gonzo would get on the stove and sort of reach into it, and you'd suddenly see him sucked up into the vent work. And now in the restaurant, you'd actually hear him moving through the vents overhead. And, you know, that's, you know, 3D audio sounds of him and Camilla clucking, you know, just, it's like, wait, I think we can find our way out. You know, just, there's just so much wonderful stuff. But the killer, the absolute killer thing they were going to do, was just past here. In fact,
we're coming up on the backside of Muppets, past Melrose's. Now there's so this is the exit to Muppets and where they do the Phineas and Ferb meet and greet now.
And literally, some of you may remember this if you went on the tram tour in, I want to say, 90 or thereabouts. You would have passed a fence, construction fence here, where Sweetums was looming over it.
Right, right.
And, you know, and sitting on the fence next to him was Robin. And this was where they were going to build Muppet Studios. And this was going to be the home of the great Muppet movie ride. And had the meanest, funniest jokes in the business. It was literally, the idea was it was a riff on the great movie ride. And, you know, you're going to be riding in little individual Pargos, you know, sort of the golf cart things.
Yeah.
And, you know, actually, it starts off, you know, you, just like the great movie ride, you're going to see that you enter this room that's, you know, big screen clips of famous movies.
Right.
You know, only it's Muppet versions. And and so, you know, for example, you're seeing the scene from Dr. Zhivago where it's, you know, the you know, only it's Piggy and Kermit in, you know, a sleigh where snow is blowing in their faces. And Gonzo, who's the director and the host of this attraction, is on, you know, sort of an armature and sort of swings out. Do you ever wonder how the movies are made? Let's say, well, follow me. And you literally duck under the screen where you've been watching Kermit and Piggy in the snow in the sleigh. And now what you see are Kermit and Piggy inside of the world's largest snow globe that's being held by four Muppet monsters that are shaking it. You know, we're grounding it here. So, it's just, it went on and on like that. I mean, it had so many wonderful gags. They did, for example, a monster movie, only it's Dr. Bunsen Honeydew as Dr. Frankenstein, and it's a 12-foot-tall beaker. and they did this great riff on Disney animated films. They literally took you into Peter Pan, you know, the bedroom of Wendy, Michael, and John.
Right.
Only it's Kermit as Peter. It's Janice.
Well, he's already got the green.
There you go.
Yeah, I got it.
Janice is Wendy. It's Scooter as John, and I'm blanking who Michael is. But of course, Tinkerbell is Piggy. All right. And the thing is that she's hanging off of this ridiculously strong rope, and she's swinging out of control, going through all of these back. But you go behind the scenes of this again, like 12 Muppet monsters holding this rope, straining, trying to control. But again, this was all. I mean, Henson himself was so excited about making this attraction because he was, you know, for his way of thinking, the Muppets were always, you know, meant to be audio animatronic figures. You know,
really?
Because, well, you think about how limited they are. That, you know, if, you know, there wasn't a person on the planet who understood more, you know, the limitations of puppeteering.
Right, yeah, it's true.
And, you know, that's all audio animatronics is. And so it's like he could not wait to make this attraction. And then, of course, you know, he dies of bacterial pneumonia. And, you know, did he, you know, the Henson family and the Disney family have that horrible falling out in it?
Yeah, 20 years.
Yeah,
gone.
Forever.
That's a shame. We're, we passed an area where we're doing Phineas and Ferb meet and greets, and they're actually out right now, as well as looks like some Cars meet and greets. Are there any plans to do anything at all with Phineas and Ferb?
Oh God, Phineas coming this summer only gets huger. You know that there's the teal takeover
No, what is that?
There's a special Phineas and Ferb series of episodes coming this season where Perry the Platypus disappears. And literally, seriously. And and then it becomes, where has Perry gone? For an entire summer, people are looking for Perry. And then, you know, then he's magically revealed and saved. But, I blew that story.
Now I don't need to watch it. Thanks.
There you go. But no, if anything, they're getting bigger and bigger. In fact, there is, and I'm kind of not happy about this change, but there's some serious conversations about taking Kim Possible.
I heard this.
Yep. Because again, the interesting thing is that Kim is still considered quite viable by the company. In fact, what's kind of interesting is this summer in June, in Long Beach, for the first time ever, they're having a Kim Possible convention. It's literally called a Kimvention.
Really?
And, you know, there's a number of people at Disney who really believe that, like, look, we have this amazing franchise. We should be paying attention to it.
Yeah.
But the problem is that Mark McCorkle and Bob Scully, the guys who created it, actually left Disney and are now working for DreamWorks Television Animation. They're the ones who are doing the Penguins of Madagascar show.
Oh, that's similar humor. I really like Kim Possible. I mean, just the names alone, but the interactions that Kim has with her parents are hysterical.
Absolutely,
it was really well written.
No, it's a great show, and it's a franchise that I think the company should definitely do something with.
But is that the reason why they stopped doing Kim Possible? Because the two lead guys left.
And the saddest part of it is that they were going to do a Kim Possible live action film. And in fact, they wrote a script that the studio absolutely loved. In fact, they loved it so much they turned to Bob and Mark and said, "We've got this other script. You did such a nice job with this. Could you punch up this other thing for us? Do you remember the film Sky High?"
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, superheroes, kids, flying bus promo. Yeah.
And it's like, talking with Bob and Mark later, it's like, we screwed ourselves out of a job. We did such a nice job of punching up the Sky High script. They went, you know, we can always go back and do the Kim Possible thing, but we've been working on Sky High for a while now. You did a nice job. We're going to go with this, but we're going to circle back on your thing. And they never did.
That's a shame. Yeah, because it's a franchise. They've done well with it, and it's you never got that resolution of it. Like, it just ended.
No, that's it.
Yeah,
exactly.
It's a shame.
To talk with Bob and Mark, they actually ended the show twice. They wrapped up the third season. They were sending her off to college, and then studio, they came back. Can we have like 13 more episodes? It's like, okay,
all right.
Another end.
That's funny.
But anyway, speaking of animated series becoming, a film. So the Phineas and Ferb feature length film is coming.
That's great.
This is not a drill. It will be out mid-July next summer.
Really?
So, yep.
Wow. So mid-July 2013.
Yep.
Fantastic.
I don't know how much juice you can actually get out of a platypus, but they're going to do everything they can. So.
Yeah. Well, it's a good series. By the way, if you guys can hear us in the background, we've got some traffic, and that's because we're on the streets of America walking down past the Chinese restaurant, past Use Guys. We made a left, and now we're heading towards the Lights, Motor, Action, Extreme Stunt Show. You want to say something?
You have to understand, again, when this park opened, Disney really struggled to find things to put into this park. And one of the things, they cut a short-term licensing deal for the character, Jim Carrey's character, Ace Ventura, Pet Detective.
Okay.
And literally, they had a stunt show out here on that corner where, Ace was trying to save the albino bat, which was this obvious piece of rubber dangling off of the side of a building. But, they hired a Jim Carrey look-alike, sound-alike. It was the most god-awful thing.
Really?
But, again, they were trying. They were making a legitimate effort. But, again, this part of the problem with New York Street, this was never, ever designed to be a guest, an area that the guests were supposed to be able to walk through. This was always supposed to be viewed from the tram. In fact, coming up here...
I remember going through this on the tram.
Yep. This is right here, the Acme Warehouse. This is, as you headed back into, tram offload, this is where the Acme Warehouse was and where the Dipmobile would menace you.
Yep.
But they used this space over here after they decided to close it off. It's like, well, what are we going to do with it? So, they were... what is it? The Goosebumps show was done here. The Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles were here. You know, the I'm blanking the Japanese fighting kids. Mighty Morphin Power Rangers.
You blanked on the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, Jim? I can't believe it.
I'm sorry, I haven't done
it. You call yourself a fan.
Okay, you know, yeah. Just impossible to remember.
So this area actually is pretty pretty good for the Osborne family spectacle of lights.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So if there's one redeeming thing that for 3 months out of the year.
But we talked about that that's what you have to ultimately do with a Disney theme park, is sometimes you will literally hold areas in reserve for that 3 months out of the year that you need them. And the rest of the year is just sort of like, well, what is here? It's like, well,
it's an interesting place. You know, if they put like tables, you know, in the alleys and stuff, you could actually have a nice little picnic area. If they ever do something similar here, like they did at the Animal Kingdom with the picnic in the park, you could throw some tables back there, and people would like that. It's that, you know, today it's not particularly sunny, but you could maybe put a little some canvas over the tops. It wouldn't be bad at all.
It's funny you mention this, because one of the things that this area is constantly used for is corporate events.
Yeah.
That, you know, I mean, they'll set up, you know, the rounds here. They'll give you food, and they'll, you know. Whether it's presenting a concert or that sort of thing.
That's nice.
All
right, we're back behind Backlot Express.
Yeah, and I don't know. This is always the interesting part of the park for me, because, again, this is... You got to remember that this was how... When this park first opened...
Well, that's totally right.
This area was never really meant to be open to the public. In fact, on Mickey Avenue, we're looking at...
This is the Backlot.
Yeah, this was back of the house. I mean, this walkway that Mickey Avenue, where you know, Toy Story Mania and all that is located on, never intended for guest driving. Never. All right? You know, the original version of the tram tour, you know, it was a two-hour-long experience. You got on the trams up toward where the animation building is. You then, you know, came backstage. They dumped you out here where you had an opportunity to eat. You had the top opportunity to go to the Acme Gag Factory with lots of interactive stuff. But then you begin your walking tour. You know, you did...
That's right. It was a two-part tour, right?
Yeah. And there wasn't a mother on the planet who came in here with a stroller that was told, you have to leave your stroller outside here by the tram tour. That, you know, it's like, look... Let me explain this to you. This is a child, all right? It wears a diaper, all right? I have one diaper with me, all right? This is not going to end well.
This 4-hour tour of yours is not going to go well.
And, you know, that was it exactly. That they had basically riots, you know, among parents. And it's like, okay, fine. This is officially open to the public now. But, you know, I remember, you know, here on opening day, because they were, again, they just opened. They really struggled to make this place look big and exciting. And one of the things they did, literally, where we're standing here right now.
Yeah, we're right in front of the Backlot Tour, behind the Muppets show building. If you guys are familiar with the park, you know where that giant Coca-Cola stand is, right in front of the Backlot Tour entrance. That's where we are.
So to make this seem more exciting than it actually was, for the 1985 version redo of... Fantasyland at Disneyland, they actually built a giant inflatable Maleficent is a Dragon balloon.
Really?
That they draped over, it literally loomed up out of, it was taller than Sleeping Beauty Castle. And
wow.
So, you know, and it put its arms out, you know, on top of the castle, and it was this killer shot, which, you know, but again, they only used it for the couple of weeks that they opened, you know, that park, and then it went back into a warehouse, and somebody remembered. And so for the opening day, it's like they inflated it and put it here. And
Maleficent.
Maleficent.
Between the bathrooms, the Backlot Tour.
You know. But it's
whatever.
Like, wow, that's amazing! it's a killer prop, but it's like... And disappeared overnight, never to be seen again.
So, that's it?
Yep.
So back somewhere in the backlot, in a closet, a very big closet somewhere.
Keep your eye on eBay, folks.
It's at mousesurplus.com.
So.
Yeah. So, well, what are they... This is the hot set. They used to do a... We're walking towards... Pixar Place, and we've got on the left what used to be the old Mickey meet and greet. What are they doing with this space? Anything?
This
is a fairly large.
If they ever actually get off the pot, is the Monsters Inc. coaster. In fact,
this is where it's going to go.
Yeah, you know, and again, I know there's a lot of people who've heard this story, and you know, don't believe this thing is coming, but it's kind of a fascinating story of the Walt Disney Company and how it operates. That cast members used to be they had, you know, cast member newsletters, the eyes and ears, the Disneyland line.
Right.
A couple of years ago, they started using what they called the cast member portal. It literally, you could go backstage, sit down at a video screen, you could access your health files, you could... But among the things they did to get people to actually use this thing is they included little films that Imagineering had done, you know, about upcoming projects, and you could see behind the scenes stuff. And so what ends up happening is one night at midnight...
One night at midnight.
All right, you know, people who work on third shift, I wake up in the morning and I have literally 8 emails from people. It's like, oh my God, the cast portal has all this amazing artwork and, you know, a film up about the Monsters, Inc. coaster. Have you heard anything about this? And it's like, I've heard that they're considering doing it. But what they ended up doing was that by the time they woke up, you know, literally 9 o'clock in the morning, West Coast time, 12 noon, file got pulled down. Somebody by accident had put this thing up and it went live. And then, you know, but this was summer of 2008. And then we had the banking crisis in the fall.
Right.
And this thing literally moved, you know, not to the back burner, but way off the back burner. But if you can actually get into this building, they literally have spray painted on the floor where the supports are supposed to go. I mean, this is...
Really?
You know, they were ready to roll with this thing. And in fact, that's always been, for a number of people I speak with in Imagineering, it's like, that's the canary in the coal mine. If, when they green light that again,
mm-hmm.
And what's interesting is if you know your Monsters, Inc., and, you know, for example, the design look of the world of Monsters, Inc., take a look at this bridge.
It's the bridge that identifies the beginning of a Pixar place. It's sort of a steampunk... brass O's and X's support beam thing.
But that's straight, you know, they pulled that design element straight out of Monsters, Inc. So again, this will eventually continue straight on into this building.
That's a good point, because on the other side, it's a brick.
That's it, exactly.
And smart.
But more to the point, you know, again, to give you some idea of the insane level of detail, the colored brick here that's used here is actually, you know, the color brick that's used for, you know, Pixar headquarters in Emeryville, California. I mean,
nice.
You know, from the where the old Demelty plant used to be. But anyway, I mean, here again, this is my problem. Look at this street. Look at how crowded this street is now.
Yeah, so we're inside Pixar Place right now. We're walking up on Toy Story Mania. It's immediately to our left. We've got one of the Green Army Men signing autographs. Actually, the line isn't for a Monday in the end of February. The line isn't terrible right now. It's only 40 minutes, and it's like 10 o'clock in the morning. That's actually not bad. It's a pretty moderate day here at the studios. But yeah, but you're right, Jim. It's Pixar Place is not a wide street by any means.
No, and you come here in May, June, July, where it's holding the heat, and you have record crowds, and it's unpleasant to come down here.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to... So two reasons. One, when people see the line for Toy Story Mania in the morning, everything just backs up. Number two, the way that they've got the Fast Pass machines oriented, the lines stretch back into the walkway, which makes it even more difficult to get through this place, because the line for Fast Passes in the morning for Toy Story Mania could be 10, 15 minutes.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. And again, but, you know, when you take into consideration that... Again, space never meant for the public, and yet you look up and you see the glass bridges,
right?
The walkway that connected the sound stages. And again, that was another thing that bit them in the butt. They were totally convinced themselves that if they built these enclosed walkways, that people would have no problem. You know, filmmakers, people are looking at me while I work. I have no problem with this.
Yeah.
And it's like exact opposite. They spent more time hanging drapes for the few productions that actually came here. Then, you know, just never, ever worked the way it was supposed to. This never became, you know, Hollywood East. I mean, we had a couple of relatively high-profile things. I mean, like the Tom Hanks miniseries From the Earth to the Moon for HBO.
Oh, that was here?
Yep.
Oh, I love that series.
You know, though, actually, a more telling film, if you can, you know, if you can watch it, I actually personally enjoy it, but... If you watch Ernest Saves Christmas, it was the first feature film shot here, and it's actually shot as they're constructing the sound stages. So there's one point where Ernest has disguised himself as a snake handler, and if you can look over his shoulder, it's literally, they're filming on the construction site. There are sound stages being built behind it. So,
well, it's an Ernest film. The budget was relatively low.
Well,
they did what they had to.
Well, that's the other thing. It's shot totally in Orlando, so they're shooting action scenes out on World Drive, and
that's beautiful.
Amazing.
So we're in front of a Walt Disney one-man's dream right now. Any place to do anything with this attraction? I kind of like it the way it is. It's got a ton of detail.
Well, as long as D23 continues with the company, this will be safe.
Okay.
You know, that right now it has a sponsor, and...
Oh, D23 is the sponsor? Oh, D23 welcomes you. I see.
Yes.
But that's an addition. Okay.
So, as long as that, you know, stays alive and well, this will be here. But, you know, again, the irony is this exhibit was actually designed for the first iteration of that attraction, which was supposed to be inside the hat, which was supposed to be outside the entrance of this park.
Really?
Yeah.
They were going to put all of Walt Disney One Man's Dream inside the hat?
It was supposed to be the entrance to the building. And then behind it was, you know, sort of a standard warehouse type of a building.
All right, we're walking through the animation arch right now. We've got Little Mermaid here on our left. We've got the Magic of Disney Animation in front of us. You can hear in the background a float going past. And on our right, we've got Disney Junior live on stage. Jim, is there anything going on with Voyage of the Little Mermaid?
Again, this is the Energizer Bunny of shows for Disney, that every 2 years or so, they talk about changing this one up, putting something new in here. But Ariel remains such a driver of merchandise and such a popular character. It's just sort of like, why spend the money to replace something that works? And so, you know, she's still here.
Yeah, there's actually a line going back now for the show lining up. They don't use Fastpass for this anymore, but it still looks like Fastpass doesn't work for shows in general. So that's not an indication of the popularity of Voyage of the Little Mermaid. It's just Fastpass doesn't work well for shows. That's interesting. So they've got no plans to do anything with the show?
Well, again, you know, it's why fix what ain't broke. I mean, mind you, you got to remember that Mermaid replaced the show itself back in 89-90, the Here Come the Muppets show, which, again, had one of my favorite moments out of a Disney theme park show, in that, you know, the entrance of the Electric Mayhem and Dr. Teeth, where it's just sort of like, you know, everyone's late for the show, but it's okay that they're taking the monorail over. And Kermit's like, the monorail doesn't come to Disney Hall. It does now. And it literally bursts through the wall. And the characters spill out of the monorail. And here's Animal, you know, reaching down off the edge of the edge, menacing the first row. And
it's a giant, an animal
walk-around costume.
Walk-around. Yep. Okay,
so the rubberhead. Right. And, you know, from there, it was just one of these things where it's like, it's okay. He's eating today. Don't worry about it. And which brings to mind the time that, you know, then First Lady Barbara Bush brought her grandchildren here along with the Secret Service, and of course Disney wants to give her a good show, so they put her in the front row. And so here comes Animal reaching off the stage, and the Secret Service stands up, and the story doesn't end well.
with the three Secret Service guys attacking Animal.
I'm just a Muppet. I'm not a man.
And again, it's pre-recorded, so it's, you know, the audio is still going on while, you know, audio, you know, poor Animal's being wrestled to the ground. So
it's hysterical. I would love to have seen that. What's going on with the Magic of Disney Animation? This is like one of those shows that it could use a little TLC, I think.
It's just so sad, because we are in obviously a transmission point. I mean, remember when this was initially built, you actually had the working Florida Animation Studio.
That's
back.
That's right.
Here.
They did like Brother Bear, and they did a couple of other things.
They did wonderful stuff here. They did, you know, in fact, they, you know, Mulan, Lilo and Stitch, you know, along with some killer shorts. And I still to this day insist that they should have left feature animation or hand-drawn animation up and running here and just made the change out in California. But when they made the decision in 2003 to literally consolidate the units, they shut down Paris, they shut down this studio, they moved everybody to California. And, you know, don't get me wrong, Disney is rebuilding. Obviously, Rapunzel, you know, was a hit. Yeah. And hearing some amazing things about Wreck-It Ralph. And it's official. We do have another princess, or excuse me, a queen movie in the work now.
Oh, thank God, because I was worried that there weren't enough princesses going on.
But they're doing the Snow Queen. It's actually...
Oh, really?
Yep. And the title has gone from Frozen to Frosted. So, you know...
Frosted, like, okay.
Like,
the Tangled.
Like, well, there you go.
Tangled, so, Frosted.
Yeah, so...
Get your adjectives here.
Lolly, lolly, lolly. No, no, it's adverbs. Sorry.
Yeah, sorry, wrong thing, but it's still the same idea. What about Disney Junior live on stage? This is new. They actually do keep this up fairly often. Every few years, every 4 or 5 years or so, they're doing a new stage show. I think because it's relatively straightforward to do that.
Oh, and more to the point, we are literally weeks out from the launch of Disney Junior. This is what replaces SoapNet. This is the standalone Disney Junior channel. And honestly, at Toy Fair just 10 days ago, Disney, you know, revealed they have 130 different Disney Junior products in the works, and that's just wave one.
Wow.
You know, I mean, no, this will just, trust me, this will just get bigger. And if you think they're paying attention to it now, just wait.
And, you know, the amazing thing is, though, I don't see a gift shop over there.
Give them time.
Exactly. Yes, yes, gift shop, Mr. Testa. Yes.
And now, again, this is what just kind of makes me sad.
No, we're walking up on the Hollywood Brown Derby. We've left the animation courtyard. I like the Brown Derby quite a bit. It's a little expensive.
It is, but it's a great facility. But do you remember when this was actually backed up against another restaurant, the Soundstage restaurant?
It had the bar above the... yeah, those were the days, Jim. Those were the days.
But they had this amazing... restaurant that literally, again, they same thing as the ABC facility. They knew what they were doing with one restaurant, but they were sharing, you know, a kitchen,
right?
And so they're like, what are we gonna do with this one, the Soundstage? And they had literally just made a comedy with Bette Midler and Lily Tomlin. I want to say Risky Business. I forget the name of it, but it's actually set at the Plaza Hotel in New York.
Oh, is it the premise for the Golden Ticket thing? Remember that the Bette Midler Golden Ticket thing that was here at the studio?
Yeah, well, but this was secondary to that. This was literally a film that it was done, I think, for Touchstone. But they had built the Plaza Hotel.
Really?
In the lobby of the Plaza Hotel in New York. And so Michael Eisner's like, we spent all this money, what are we going to do with it? And it's like they shipped it to Florida, and you actually could eat in the set. And then what got kind of interesting is that park had only been open a year or two, and somebody noticed, well, wait a minute, we got Beauty and the Beast, and that's got kind of ornate-looking things in it, and they changed the Soundstage restaurant, went from a Bette Midler movie to Beauty and the Beast, and then Aladdin, and, you know, it was a charming facility for a while. So.
But they don't need a restaurant back there?
Well, not so much as they need something for children, you know, preschoolers.
Got it. So another attraction for preschoolers.
So. Yeah, that's right, because before Toy Story came out, they really didn't have a whole lot for kids to do early in the morning.
Well, more to the point, remember that when this park opened in 89, literally, Roger Rabbit had come out, and Mermaid was 6 months away from coming out.
Right.
The animation revival hadn't happened yet, so Disney was really struggling because obviously the characters, classic characters, live at the Magic Kingdom. And it's like, so what is the studio? And in fact, there's still this internal struggle as to how does the studio, you know, what's the symbiotic relationship between the studio? Supposedly, the way it works is characters go to the studio to be introduced. And then after a year or a couple of years, they then go to live at the Magic Kingdom.
Ah.
Sadly, that rule has fallen apart. You know, for example, Tangled, you know, literally opened.
That's hugely popular, too.
Yeah, yeah.
That's where they used to do Storytime for Belle.
And if the rumors are true, we may see Beast, of the long-running Beast show here, replaced by a Tangled musical.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
Well, we're on Sunset Boulevard right now. We're to our left is Starring World's Cafe. We're right in front of the Sweet Spells Villains store, and across the street from the Legends of Hollywood shop. I really like this area of the studios. This is my favorite part of the studios. We talked about this on the WWCA podcast a couple of weeks ago, and one of the things that we really like about it is they've integrated both the building facades, the music, and sort of like the long view terminus there, the weenie of the tower. It all works really, really well. The interesting thing is, one of the most popular attractions in the park, the Rock and Roller Coaster, you can't see from where we're standing here. That's because it wouldn't fit in.
Yep.
So they really did a great job there. Let's talk about anything going on with Starring Rules, by the way?
Well, you know, it's, again, this part of the park works. All right. You know, and in fact, that's right now, you know, the when they talk about this park, it's more about how do we drive people down toward lights, motor, action.
Good point.
But again, that's only something you have to worry about 9 months out of the year because you have the Osborne lights driving people back there. I mean, again, it's more a case of what do we need? And again, when you talk about Walt Disney World, you are in direct competition with three other parks. It's like, you know, because Disney Hollywood Studios isn't really wanting for anything right now. I mean, we're here on a Monday in February, and it's
this part of the park actually on Sunset Boulevard is fairly crowded right now. The streets are they're not packed, but they're definitely people walking around in it. There's already people in line, I guess, for, is it lunchtime?
Well, you know, you can never get a turkey leg too early.
Exactly, and they've got hot dogs and stuff. And this actually part of the park works, I think, fairly well. They've got a good mix here of food. They've got four or five different places you can get food. They've got retail on the right hand side, food on the left. It's well organized. I think seating is a little bit lacking on this side of the park, but other than that, it's not bad at all. You mentioned Beauty and the Beast. The stage show is coming up right here on the right.
Yep. I mean, but again, I guess the thing of it is being, having seen all the plans for what was supposed to go in here, it is nice, but the stuff that was going to go in would have moved this from nice to amazing. This would have moved up from being the park behind Epcot to kind of the park that you had to go to right after the Kingdom.
Wow.
I mean, for example, where we are right here, we're at
Sunset Ranch Market.
Okay. This is where the Toontown Transit attraction was supposed to be. And the idea was that you come to this, and it's literally what we would have just passed here, for example, would have been Mickey Land, which was a recreation of the studio on Hyperion. I mean, just the little slow slung bungalows, and you would have gone in and been actually able to see, you know, the classic Disney characters, the pie-eyed versions. But next to this was going to be Toontown Transit, where you would have gotten on Gus the Bus. But this was the next generation of simulator. In that, what they were going to do was couple not only the you're going to have screens not only to the front of you, but to the side of you. So as you move through Toontown, you literally move through Toontown.
Wow.
And, you know, actually what was supposed to happen is you got in your load area and you would have, your driver wasn't there, and Roger takes the wheel. And Roger takes you right up to the top of Mount Toonmoor. And then, you know, you have the pinnacle overlooking this wonderful view of the Toontown. And Roger, but who's at the top of the Mount Toonmoor? But, you know, Jessica and Baby Herman. You know, Jessica's there, Baby Herman's in a carriage, and Roger turns around and says, oh, I got to go out and talk to my honey. And just, so he pulls the brake and steps out, and you literally see him in front of the bus, and he's talking with Jessica and that sort of thing. And while you're in the car, you see the brake slip, and now you now begin to roll back down the hill. And now Roger sees you and races after you, and it's now Roger trying to get back into the bus that's rolling backwards down into Toontown. What was cool about it is Disney had found this version of vacuform plastic. They had this illusion that they loved to do. And in fact, when they mocked it up, what they do is Roger at one point would be thrown in the air over the bus, and you just hear him go up, and then you hear him plummet back down, and then the ceiling would cave in Roger's exact shape.
Classic.
You know, and you'd see him move, and then, you know, would bubble back, you know, just bump back into shape, and Roger would drop back into the driver's seat, and, okay, we're going to take you back. But, no, there was so much cool stuff that were going to be back here. There was, for example, I mean, just Tower of Terror alone. I mean, you know, this actually started out, for example, as the attraction that Disney wanted to do with Mel Brooks. You know, one version of it was literally, you know, this was going to be Frankenstein's Castle, that you were going to, you know, the Frankenstein.
Yeah. Igor.
You know, and, you know, then there was, you know, then it was Hotel Mel. And, in fact, to hear Craig McNair Wilson talk about it, what was going to be interesting, there was one iteration of the plan for this where literally the hotel, this was the sealed off, this whole building was the sealed off wing of the hotel. The rest of the hotel, which guests could have actually stayed in,
wow,
extended all the way to the entrance.
Wow, from the back part of the park by Hollywood Tower Hotel over to the entrance.
Yep.
So behind where Beauty and the Beast is. And
in fact, in one version of that plan, just like Euro Disney, literally, you would have walked under the Hollywood, you know, Disney's Hollywood Hotel to get into, you know, the park.
That would have been great.
No, there's so many amazing ideas. In fact, Craig's the guy who basically created Streetmosphere for the parks. And what he wanted to do with this, it was sort of the next generation of what they do in the Great Movie Ride, where you have live actors interacting with AA figures.
Right, right.
Craig thought, wouldn't it be interesting if you literally, for example, if you went into the lobby of the hotel and there were three figures. There was one live person and two audio animatronic figures. But the gimmick of the ride was that the audio animatronic figures were on a turntable, and at any one time during the day, they could swap out the AA figure that was sitting in the lobby for a live. And so you'd go in and you would literally never know who the live human was. And so, yeah, but they were going to do that throughout the whole ride.
That would have been beautiful.
No.
That would have confused too many people.
No, absolutely, absolutely. Or, I mean, now headed over toward Rock and Roller Coaster, this was actually going to be where they did the horror theme. Because, again, remember, when this park opened up, Disney didn't do horror. Universal did horror.
Right.
And so they were like, well, how do we do this? And they finally came up with a concept for the show called The Creature's Choice. And the idea was, it was literally an award show for monsters.
Nice.
And the interesting thing is, it was going to be built like the Carousel of Progress, in that you would rotate through a bunch of show scenes supposedly as part of this award show. And the finale of the show is, they gave a Lifetime Achievement Award to Godzilla. And literally just his foot came through the ceiling. And it's like,
that's classic.
All right, but that was here, along with a great show about, they wanted to explore all process of filmmaking. And one of the shows they created was, Ghost Rider.
Ghost Rider or Writer?
Ghost Writer.
All right, okay.
And the gimmick of the show is, it was going to be like you were sitting, the Pepper's Ghost effect for...
Right. The mansion.
You're sitting in a theater where this entire show is a Pepper's Ghost effect.
Really?
You know, the idea is in fact, borrowing a page from Hitchcock, Rear Window. You're in an apartment complex looking at a guy who's working in, like a greenhouse apartment thing. Mm-hmm. And he's working on, a film noir. And, but as he's sitting at his manual typewriter, as he dreams up characters, they appear in the room. So it's like, the mole comes out of the typewriter and the thug and the little weaselly character and all that.
Nice.
But as he would literally, and as he dealt with them, he'd, ball up the piece of paper that he'd written them on, and they'd literally fall into the trash. But yeah, that was here as well. But of course, the problem with that is you had to figure out a way to increase capacity. They were going to put two theaters side by side to try to bump a set number of people through an hour for this 15-minute show. But in the end, what people wanted were thrills, and this is what we have now.
Rock and Roller Coaster. So, are there any plans to? I mean, Aerosmith seems like they're every time you count them out.
Yeah.
It seems like Aerosmith comes back.
No,
they're going to be around for a while.
They're happy with this though. The one thing you will see change over here relatively soon is the Rock and Roller Coaster Lounge area, which, again, is part of the next gen.
Oh, they're going to do that. So remember that, so a couple years ago, last year, they tested a sort of a group waiting area. Mm-hmm. Instead of waiting in line, you waited in an area, and you were called, by group to board the ride. They're going to do something similar?
What they're going to do, literally bump out here into where the old ESPN thing was located.
Okay.
And it's literally, you're a rock star. So it's like, your ride isn't ready yet. Come wait in the green room. And you come back and there's going to be, for example, a place where they've got a sponsorship deal lined up with Rockstar. I mean, literally, you can play the game
on a
widescreen. There will be a refreshment stand. There'll be a DJ playing music. I mean, while you wait for your turn to, your ride's here, sir. Okay. But, they're going to try to create the whole fawning green room experience.
Oh, that's great. but they're going to have to do it on a massive scale, 500 people at a time.
No, that's it exactly. It's a giant space, but it's going to be literally, I mean, you're familiar with the scene one concept, right?
It's the intro scene, the queue, the pre-show, or the queue for any of the attractions.
So just think of this as, what they're doing with Dumbo the Flying Circus, the game interaction area. Think of that for adults, all right? We have a place for you to sit down. Oh, we can get you a beverage. Get up and play a game, But yeah, that goes in right to the side, and you'll now load in you know, you'll sort of come in behind to the pre-show in that movie.
And so what's the idea behind that? Is just to distract people from the fact that it's a 40-minute wait?
Pretty much. And, you know, the weird thing of it is that, you know, I mean, that is always the sore point of a Walt Disney World vacation, that people are upset about waiting, the lines. And if you can distract them from that moment, if you can, you know, entertain them, you know, to distraction,
right,
you know, that they don't obsess about the fact that I waited 40 minutes to get on it. It's like, oh, yeah, that's the place where you and I played Rockstar together.
Not the place where we spent 40 minutes on all lives and never get back.
That's it, exactly. So, no, it's about to get really interesting here. I don't know if, you know, I mean, everyone seems obsessed on the notion of, well, how's Disney going to battle Harry Potter? And, you know, I think when you get right down to it, when you compare Universal's attendance, what is it, 7-8 million a year?
Eight-ish, 8 to 9 now.
Okay. And the what, the 22 million?
Yes.
You know, it's more about, look, we have market dominance. We just have to, you know, find a way to make having them here that much more pleasant.
Yeah.
So...
That's a good point. So there's not a lot that they have to do, and really if they sunk, you know, $3 billion, $4 billion, whatever, into a park like the studios, what could they realistically expect for a return? It's not like they're going to go from, you know, 9 million people a year at the studios to 17 million a year.
No, that's exactly.
No, well, the park infrastructure doesn't support it. Number one,
no.
You know, they'd have to build that out. Number two, it's just that's an unrealistic expectation. I mean, they'd have to essentially double the size of the park, and even then. Think of all the people who have already been here who still have that preconceived idea of what the studios is like. So even if you tell them, hey, we spent $5 billion, we added, you know, 16 new attractions, they're like, eh, we might get back to it. We might not.
Yeah, and again, that's ultimately what people need to remember is that, you know, this a theme park is a people-eating machine, and this is a line of business for Disney. And it's just sort of like, show me my return on investment. You know,
yeah.
I mean, just what just happened with, well, for example, we're headed back toward, you know, American Idol right now. And what happened with Star Tours? You spend all this money, you know, you put this brand new version of the ride in with all these amazing details, and you don't see an attendance jump.
Yeah, it was really, really tiny. It was like maybe a couple percent for a short period of time. Essentially, all the locals, you know, everyone within a couple hundred mile radius who hadn't seen it before wanted to go see it. They did. That was it.
Yeah, and so, you know, was that money well spent? And you know, again, arguing about Idol, you know, all that money, cutting that licensing deal, and you know, and now it's like, please, 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 come sing.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, we haven't talked about American Idol. Are there any plans to do anything with that? I get the sense from American Idol that it's one of those things where, like with Phineas and Ferb, they're sort of striking while the iron is hot. Mm-hmm. This was one where they maybe struck after the iron had started cooling for a couple of years.
Absolutely, absolutely. And in fact, that's now. You know, we're back to the same problem. We have this amazing structure right in the middle of the park.
Yeah, it's very nice.
But what do you do with it? I mean, it just, you know, you know, people literally walk into this park and, you know, reach the hat, and it's like, it's right there on the left. And it's like, you need to figure out what to put in this because, you know, people want to believe that they're getting value out of their trip. So.
So I know that the show's the last show of the day for American Idol is usually pretty crowded, but I'm looking at it now. There's a show going on in half an hour. I literally don't see anyone in... Not half an hour, sorry. There's a show going on in 15 minutes. I don't see anyone out in front for American Idol.
And that is the problem. You know, on paper, this worked.
Yeah.
You know, and...
The ratings for the show aren't that good this year.
And that's the other thing. When you live and die... You know, something like that. When you know, it's a dairy product, and right now, Idol. I won't say Idol's in its death spiral. I mean, there's
it's still pulling star ratings. It's just not, you know, the single thing that everybody had to watch all the time.
You know, and that was the thing. Disney, built this thing. It wasn't even in the white hot moment of the show. It was just sort of like it you know,
a year or two after. Yeah.
Yeah, and so.
Anyway. Is there any parting thoughts for Disney's Hollywood Studios?
Other than, to be honest, in a weird sort of way, this park, you know, if you know your Disney history, this park only exists because they didn't know. You know, when they opened Epcot, people were desperate for Disney characters. And, you know, it was one of these things. It was a Disney character-free zone. They had to figure out how to do it.
Let's build another park.
You know,
we still rented the construction equipment.
Well, the other thing is they had literally spaced out between the land and Imagination Pavilion. They were going to put in an entertainment pavilion. Mm-hmm. And this was where you were going to get to... get, in fact, there was a rudimentary form of the Great Movie Ride where you get to see celebrities. But on the other side was literally a How We Do Disney Animated Films. And it was going to be kind of a classic dark ride, only you rode through watching them make The Rescuers. Oh, only, nice. But all the grips were like the grips with the Seven Dwarfs. And you know that you know Donald was up in the flies working the wires, holding you know the boat up for you know Bernard and Bianca to ride in, and it was only Eisner walking through the door and seeing that pavilion, and more to the point, knowing that Universal was getting ready to do its studio. It's like, yeah. I know what we can do with that, and here we are today.
So. Well, Jim, thanks for doing this episode with us. We'll be back with another episode soon.
Always great fun. Thanks.
Thanks.
Stupid Judy, stupid energy.
This has been a production of Mouse World Radio.
This podcast is sponsored by AAA, the American Automobile Association. AAA members get discounts on tickets, resort accommodations, and more at Walt Disney World and other Orlando attractions. If you book a qualifying Walt Disney World resort vacation package at select AAA offices, you'll receive a free subscription to touringplans.com and dedicated trip planning resources just for AAA clients. Go to AAA.com or ask your local AAA travel agent for more details on this offer.